From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Since Russia's annexation of Crimea last month, the U.S. and EU have imposed economic sanctions on Russia in an effort to persuade President Vladimir Putin to reverse the move. Here to discuss the crisis, as well as negotiations over a new free trade pact between the U.S. and Europe, as well as the rise of far-right political parties in the European Union, is the ambassador to the U.S. from the European Union, João Vale de Almeida. Ambassador Almeida, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you very much for hosting me.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I did want to start first with a quick discussion of the Ukraine, with Ukrainian forces effectively gone from Crimea now. Is it a done deal? Is Crimea effectively a part of Russia and the world should just accept that?
Well, I think we've been very clear on two points. First, full solidarity with Ukraine. We want to support Ukrainian people in their aspirations for full democracy, but also for a closer relationship with the European Union. And secondly, we've been very firm and very clear and very tough with Russia, saying that we cannot accept the annexation of Crimea. We cannot accept the attitude of Russian authorities in recent weeks. And we call them to find political solutions, to engage with Ukrainian authorities, and together find diplomatic solutions for this very difficult and dangerous situation.
And is there any evidence that this message is getting through?
Well, we hope so. We believe it's in the interest of Russia to find a diplomatic solution for this problem. We believe it's in the interest of Russia to have a stable neighborhood. And what we are offering Ukraine, and Ukraine has accepted, is a closer relationship with the European Union that will create conditions for economic development in Ukraine, for more prosperity for Ukrainian citizens. They look at their neighbors, Poland, and they see how well Poland has done in the last few years, 10 years of membership of the European Union, but also creating conditions for stability in Ukraine. I think this is in the interest of Russia as a neighbor and having very strong links with Ukraine.
Now, there's been criticism in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world that the European Union is fundamentally unable to take the steps, the economic sanctions, to convince Russia to pull back because Europe is so dependent on Russia for gas supplies and has so many business interests in Russia that fundamentally Europe is afraid or unwilling to take the steps that would be needed to inflict real harm on the Russian economy.
No, Europe is not afraid and Europe is not unwilling. Europe is very determined to again support Ukrainian aspirations, and to be very clear with Russia that we don't accept this kind of behavior. Let me be clear about one point. It's true that we import energy from Russia, and some of our member states are, you know, very dependent upon Russian exports. But that also means that Russia is dependent on our markets to sell their own products. So this is a two-way street. We have to realize that it's in Russia's interest to keep good relationship with Europe. We are their most important market. We are neighbors. Our economies are interdependent. So it's in the final, ultimate interest of Russian economy, and I believe Russian as a country, to maintain good relationship with Europe, to keep the flow of gas and other economic activity between Russia and Europe, including Ukraine. And we should look at the final and the big picture here and consider that there is interdependence, there is a mutual interest in reinforcing these ties. But we will not compromise our values in favor of economic interests.
Well, if I could just follow up on that, what you're saying is very logical and your analysis is very comprehensive, and that it doesn't appear to be in Russia's interest to do what it has done. It doesn't appear to be in their economic interest. It doesn't appear to be in their interest of their relationship with the European Union. Yet they've done it anyway.
Yeah, and we have condemned it, and we continue to condemn. And we have clearly said, we have decided a number of sanctions against Russia. You noticed that. And we are ready to do more in case Russia escalates further. And this is very clear. And by the way, we are in full sync with the United States on that. We had, a few days ago, President Obama coming to Brussels to discuss these issues with my leaders, the European leaders, and the conclusions were very clear.
Well, you mentioned that the European Union and the U.S. are willing to do more. What specific steps do you anticipate the EU will take if Russia does move into eastern Ukraine?
I mean, if Russia further escalates this conflict and this situation, we'll be ready to be tougher than we have been. And this will particularly affect Russia's economic interests.
Tough is a subjective term. Can you be a little more specific about what this will mean? To date, it doesn't appear that the sanctions have had a large impact on President Putin's decision-making.
Tougher in the sense that the economic impact will be even more important than the one that has, you know, resulted from the existing sanctions right now. And I can tell you what I saw in Brussels, and I came from Brussels just a few days ago, I saw a great deal of determination on all our leaders to carry out this attitude and say very clearly that we cannot accept this kind of behavior, that we want Russia to engage in a dialogue with the Ukrainian authorities. We want Russia to accept a negotiated solution for this problem together with the European Union, together with other institutions that operate at the European level. And this will translate into a tougher set of sanctions in case Russia does not accept the way forward that we are putting down on the table right now.
Well, let me ask you briefly about the free trade discussions that are underway between the U.S. and European Union that began last year. Those discussions haven't received a lot of attention in the U.S. and have received some attention in Europe, and there's been a lot of criticism there, and I think the U.S. public has generally been skeptical about free trade deals, in particular since the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada. What message do you have for ordinary Americans and for ordinary Europeans about why this is good for them?
You know, in today's globalized economy, trade, the economy, is part of the way countries assume their role in the world. Economy is about power in today's world. So we need to look at ways and means to maximize our capacity to influence the way the world is governed, the way the global economy is regulated. But we also look at trade as a source of jobs and growth. So what we're doing across the Atlantic is to look at our economic relationship, which is already a very vibrant one. We are, you know, we cover more or less half of the world's wealth. But there's more we can do. So we're looking at all the barriers that exist to trade and investment, from tariffs to regulation, and see how best we can cooperate to create jobs. So if you want to talk about Missouri, what is in it for Missouri, for instance? I think there will be more jobs and more economic opportunities.
Well, I'm glad that you raised the U.S. Midwest, too, because there has been a lot of attention to the agriculture focus of the talks now. The European Union has a different position than the U.S. on genetically modified crops. And in the U.S., there's also been a lot of discussion or concern about the naming or use of certain names of cheeses like Parmesan cheese or feta cheese. Could you talk a little bit about why this is important to the European Union?
Well, agriculture is important, but it's not the only economic sector that is covered by TTIP. TTIP covers everything, from agriculture to manufacturing goods, but also investment and conditions for investment. So it's a comprehensive agreement that can potentially be very beneficial for our economies. Again, our focus is jobs and growth. In the agriculture sector, we have the prospect is to open up our markets, is to improve access to our market for American exporters, and vice versa. We export different things on the agriculture sector. Mm-hmm. You export more commodities, we export more high-value products. Each of them poses different problems. On your side, you have some regulatory issues that you would like to see addressed. Let's see how much we can do there. On our side, we have market access pure, and we want to have lower tariffs, we want to have recognition of our products, and in some areas, we need to have recognition of our geographic indications. For the sake of the consumer interests, we want the consumer, when they buy a product, to know exactly where it comes from. It corresponds to the name that is written on the label.
If an American buys Parmesan cheese, your argument is then they may be confused buying American-made Parmesan cheese not from Parma in Italy.
There's very good cheese in America, and I'm a consumer of American cheese. But when I buy Camembert de Meaux, which is a particular type of Camembert cheese, I want to be sure that it comes from that region in France and not from somewhere else. But I love Wisconsin cheese, for instance, and I consume it on a regular basis. But I think we owe it to our consumer that is becoming more and more sophisticated, that they know exactly what they're buying, right? Some of the names are already generic names, and no one is going to challenge that. But when we have a specific geographic indication linked to a product, we would like to protect that for the sake of our consumers, American or European consumers. I think we can find solutions. We found good solutions with our Canadian friends. We just concluded a free trade area with Canada, and we found, you know, reasonable solutions for that. I have no doubts that we'll find solutions for all these problems with our American friends. And this will translate into more products, more American products in Europe, more European products here, better choices for the consumers, better prices, more competitive offers.
Let me ask you just briefly about the recent gains made by far-right parties in France in the French elections recently. Similar far-right parties are expected to do well in elections in the United Kingdom, in the Netherlands, elsewhere in Europe. Do you see that this is sort of the beginning of a trend of the slow disintegration of the European Union, that these parties are likely to continue to make gains?
I don't think so. I am very confident on the future of European project. I think we have gone a long way since the Second World War to prove that this is the right way forward, that European countries need to find ways to understand each other. They need to find ways to build a common future. You have to understand this emergence of far-right parties, and far-left as well. It's not only far-right. But the extremes have a more important expression today because of the economic crisis, because of the financial crisis followed by economic crisis, and in some countries, very deep social crisis. So it's a kind of normal reaction for people to look for more extreme solutions. I'm confident that as we come out of the economic crisis, as we increase the growth rate in Europe, as we reduce unemployment, there will be a more balanced expression in political terms. This being said, the pro-Europeans need to speak up. Those who believe that Europe is the right choice for our societies need to say it very clearly and counter those arguments. Because if you look at the arguments coming from the far right and the far left, I don't think they survive a more attentive scrutiny. And the debate is there. We believe in democracy. We believe that the debate will clarify and separate the waters. We're looking forward to elections for the European Parliament in late May. And I'm confident that we have a very solid majority of pro-Europeans in the European Parliament.
Well, good. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Ambassador Valli, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Coming on Global Journalist.
Thank
Until
you.
Next time, I'm Jason McClure.